morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the April 21st, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is being provided in a hybrid manner, allowing members of the public to participate in person and telephonically. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic hybrid meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. Except for Board of Commissioners and specific RI Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the commissioners and participating staff to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers speaking. This meeting is being held in person with additional telephonic access being provided to the public. Today's agenda and related documents and information are available on the RI Housing website. If the teleconference portion is interrupted for any reason, we'll stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Vice Chairman James Thorson will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak during the meeting, please do state your name each and every time prior to speaking. And with that, Mr. Vice Chairman, I turn it back to you to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne, and good morning, everyone. This is Jim Thorson, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. Carol, can you please conduct a roll call for the attendance, Board of Commissioners?
Certainly. Commissioner James Thorson.
I'm here.
Commissioner Designee Nina Burrard.
Present.
Commissioner Liz Tanner.
Here.
Commissioner Kevin Wah.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Carol. It's Jim Thorson again, and I'd like to introduce board action number one on the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes for the board meeting held on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2022. Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Sorry, is that Liz? Leanne,
second?
Second. Okay, so that was Liz. Made the motion. Leanne, second. It's Jim Thorson. Do we have any discussion? Okay. I'd like to ask General Counsel to conduct a roll call on the motion. Corinne?
Certainly. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of approving the minutes of the board meeting held on March 17th, 2022, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Barry is not present at the moment. Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
For agenda item number two, this is Jim Thorson. It's time for the presiding commissioner's remarks, and I know we have a very ambitious agenda today, so I'm going to limit my comments to just saying thanks everybody for coming. I know that it's challenging. I have a nasty cold, and I've been tested 3 times for COVID in the last week. I keep coming up negative, so and I'm feeling a little bit better today, medication I expect. But with that, Carol, what I'd like to do is turn it over to you so that we can go over your review of recent activities and trends.
Okay. So thank you, Director. I'm not going to be presenting my full ED report today, but it's uploaded for your information, and I'm happy to answer questions. 2 items that I just want to flag to you is that we will be celebrating the groundbreaking of Barbara Jordan 2 on Monday at 10 a.m. I hope all of you will come and join us. As you know, this is event has been a long time coming. We all began speaking with HUD back in 2016 about relocating tenants that were living in poor condition and gaining access and securing the property. So I'm happy that we're finally able to break ground. on this important development. And I want to congratulate Carol LaChapelle. She has been named the 2022 Providence Business News Woman of the Year, representing the government. So folks will be celebrating with Kara at an event that I won't be at, but that everybody else will be. I couldn't ask for a better colleague or CFO with the agency. I know you all know what Kara brings to the table, and we could not run the agency without her. So I want to introduce. Let me just move your brief.
Question?
Sure, you can. Oh, I'm sorry.
I know that you had an oversight hearing.
We did.
In the last month. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Is there any follow-ups that need to be done?
Yeah, we did have a very good meeting with the Senate Oversight Committee. They're very interested in what we're doing at the agency, the production that we're doing, our relationship vis-a-vis the governor's office, and are building a relationship with our deputy secretary. There were very few follow-up questions that were asked by the Senate Oversight Committee. Some of it related to industry standards around building permits and other things, a lot of which we don't really have a lot of that data. It's not being collected, but we followed up with Commissioner Tanner on the information that she's collecting in her agency, and I look forward to working with her and her team as they try to encourage more robust reporting on municipal level. Chris, anything to add? I know you presented on rent relief ROI, and of course, that's always a hot topic. But I think we've done miracles with that program. And so I think they were pleased with the presentation. It was 2.5 hours. It was a long meeting. But we got through it, and I think it went well.
I'm sorry. I was looking through the materials, and it is in your comments from last month, but I didn't know that we were going to get another update on rent relief. All right, today.
I wasn't planning.
Okay, that's fine.
An update on.
All right, great.
I mean, Chris can certainly tell you.
Sure.
That we're making progress, but go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no. I mean, things are going really well. We did hit the end of March benchmark, which was the staff was amazing. They did a crazy job getting there, and so we were very excited about that. Treasury's issued guidance about how they intend to recapture, so we're in conversations with the governor's staff and the state around that. We keep going until, you know, every last dollar is spent. It does look like we'll be talking about how to wind the program down this summer, though.
But I believe you are in a meeting with us, with the governor director. I think I saw you added to an appointment where we're going to discuss ERA and,
right,
and the options.
Right, except for 5 o'clock tomorrow. And
it's moved to next week, though. So, yeah, so
we're happy to touch base beforehand if you'd like. We're happy to chat about that before
like
the
to,
meeting.
I'd like to make sure that we're preventing a united front.
Yes, happy to do that.
All right, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on the ED report before I turn it over to our Deputy Secretary? Okay, Josh, please.
Good morning, Josh Saul, Deputy Secretary of Commerce for Housing. I want to thank you for having me today, and thank Executive Director Ventura as well as the board just for your dedication and service really to what one of the most important topics, not just today, but even when it's not as much of a hot topic. And I'll keep this brief. I just wanted to present a little bit on what my role is, what I'm looking to achieve, and how we can work together between the state agency and Rhode Island Housing, as well as a lot of the developers and really everyone who's working in the development space for affordable housing in the state of Rhode Island. So I'll just start with the objectives for Rhode Island 2030 and really beyond, because that's what we're talking about. Housing does not have a 5 to 10 year lifespan, as all of you know. And this is from the planning process that the governor and his staff together over the past year, some conversations, but also my efforts to synthesize what I heard from those meetings and really take those ideas and put them into objectives. These objectives that we're speaking about are really central to the work that we're doing, because we have to tie all of our programs and all of our actions from the staff level all the way to leadership level, and really focus in and hone in on how they're actually meeting their objectives. And housing is such an important need right now. It's very easy to lose track of the people that we are serving, as well as those primary goals and objectives. So just speaking here for the ones that you'll see are really the creation, preservation of housing across income levels, stabilizing households that are at risk of involuntary displacement or homelessness, promoting accessible and supportive housing that includes services, strengthening the fabric of local neighborhoods, towns, and cities, as well as improving the quality and the safety of the existing housing stock. But just to give you an idea, when we did the presentation on the SFRF budget, just an example, there's a multitude of different buckets, programs that we are proposing that the General Assembly will hopefully approve. And you'll see in the appendix, or what I really tried to do as well when I was presenting, is tie these back again to those five objectives as we focus in on the program design for each one of these and the implementation, how that goes, how we implement the program, how that's actually meeting the objectives through our decisions and the program design and the actions of staff and board. I also just wanted to give a little bit of an overview. I don't think the board members here, you're probably very familiar with this, but just with my position where I lie is under the Secretary of Commerce, and the position that was created last year through the legislature really has this role as focusing on the coordination of all of the work that different agencies, how it touches upon housing, and coordinating with Rhode Island Housing as well as housing authorities, localities, to push forward and to advance the goals, shared goals and consensus. I'll provide really as well the one of the main things, even coming here to Rhode Island, that we hear often is that there's no housing plan. In a lot of ways, I beg to differ. There's a lot of housing plans, but what hasn't been clear is both the consensus that we need to build among not just legislators and staff, but also among communities, individuals, all stakeholders really, as well as whether it's landlords, tenants that make up the ecosystem that is our housing world here in Rhode Island. And this means doing some planning and really thinking about how we do that, it's easy to say we will build consensus, but it's harder to think about how that consensus gets operationalized and becomes actionable items. And as I said previously, this is extremely important to me that our decisions at the staff level and at the leadership level need to follow that policy guidelines, the consensus, and the actionable items that we lay forth through a statewide housing plan. And as the legislative session will come to close in June, my focus will mostly shift on creating the statewide housing plan with Rhode Island Housing staff, with the different towns and municipalities, with the Housing Resource Commission, to really enable us to guide the investments that we're making, both through federal sources, through state sources, as well as through policy that we enact, either through legislation or at an administrative level. So with that, I'll conclude because I don't want to take too much of your time. I know there are a lot of very important projects on the agenda today, and I want to again express my gratitude for not just the staff at Rhode Island Housing, but for the commissioners, the board members here that have really served such an important role of making Rhode Island Housing both as an entity and as a state really at the forefront, really punching above its weight, so to speak, in terms of the production of affordable housing and really meeting the goals that we have and setting forth for the residents of Rhode Island.
Any questions for the deputy?
I have one question, Josh. On the on the page here. Wasn't there a $65 million bond issued for affordable housing? How does that factor into this? Where the million was?
Yes, no, of course. There's the application bond. I believe you're most likely referring to the building from Rhode Island, as well as the, we often speak in acronyms, I believe it's the ARP is also part of that bond, the acquisition, losing what that stands for,
acquisition. Acquisition and Revitalization Program.
Acquisition, yes. And Revitalization Program.
Mm-hmm.
And that is being deployed right now through the RFP, specifically, that Rhode Island Housing put out in March. Some of those funds, what was left over in the BHRI, is being deployed and really issued in conjunction with a lot of the other sources, including some of these funds that were approved under SFRF in January as part of what people sometimes call the down payment of the SFRF package or Rhode Island rebounds, that they're being consolidated. And this is really a credit, again, to the staff at Rhode Island Housing for taking a lot of disparate sources and managing to create really what is the largest, I believe the largest round of funding for the creation of affordable housing that the state has seen in many, many years, if not in its history.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've just to expand a little bit on what the deputy said, we've actually committed, awarded, the HRC awarded $33 million, correct? $33 million in the housing production money under the housing bond, and we funded, I believe, four developments under the acquisition and revitalization program. So we do have the one-stop app that Josh mentioned we released, and there's a number of programs, housing production fund and the rebound dollars and many of our resources, capital magnet fund. And we extended the deadline to
Monday the 25th.
Yes, yes. So all of those proposals will roll in, and Ann and all of her staff and Josh and his new staff will be working through all of these proposals to come up with a strategy on how to best deploy quickly so we can get housing units built.
So just to follow up on that, I'm not going to ask this as a question. I'm just going to make this as a comment, because there's a lot of attention that is being paid to make sure that the SFRF money is put out timely. But I believe there are milestones that have to be met from deploying capital. And I just wanted to be sensitive to that. I know. And just for the record, say that this is something that's going to be a very hot topic. I have less concern over housing because I know there's an infrastructure here for deploying capital that doesn't exist in some other areas that we have more concerns over. That's something that we're going to be paying a lot of attention to. And so tracking and reporting is going to be pretty important.
Thank you.
So, if you're not talking, please mute your telephone.
Thank you, Josh Saul. This is Jim Thorson again, and we move on to agenda board action number four, which is approval of external charitable donations and contributions. And for that, I'd like to introduce James Comer, our Deputy Executive Director, who will present on committee actions, committee action number four.
Chairman, this is Leanne. Before James begins his presentation, I have to recuse myself.
Thank you, Commissioner. We only have one charitable contribution this month, and it's for seven staff to attend the Crossroads Women Helping Women event on May 11th. That's an event we attend every year. It's a fantastic event where women come out to support the women who benefit from Crossroads programs. We'll be sending, again, seven staff for a total cost of $875. It's supporting a great partner and a great cause.
Okay, James, thank you. It's Jim Thorson again, and what I'd like to do is request a motion to approve committee action number four.
So moved.
Is that Liz?
Liz Tanner, so moved.
Okay.
Kevin Orth, second.
Kevin, and second by Kevin Orth. Do we have any questions or discussion? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Council to conduct a roll call vote on the motion.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of providing approval of external charitable donations and contributions, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
We have 3 affirmative votes and 1 recusal. The motion carries.
Thank you. Thank you, Corinne. It's James Thorson again. And we're moving on to board action number 5, which is preliminary approval of financing for Copley Chambers 1 in Providence. And for that, we'd like to ask Ann Berman, the Director of Real Estate Development, to present on board action number 5.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Ann Berman. This request is for preliminary commitment of a taxable construction loan totaling $3 million, of which $2.39 million will remain as a permanent first mortgage for Copley Chambers 1. The developer is Marathon Development. It's a vertically integrated company related to Marathon Construction Company. The project involves the rehab of a vacant historic building, which is located at 206 Broad Street in Providence. It was originally constructed in 1913, and it is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Marathon intends to convert the structure into 26 units. The rents will be targeted between 30% and 80% of AMI. There will be a small commercial office on the first floor, which is targeted to provide supportive services to both residents of the building as well as the community. I will note that Marathon is a new developer to the Rhode Island housing affordable landscape. And this project is being done without the benefit of low-income housing tax credits. So it's an interesting and, I think, welcome execution. They have secured 8 project-based vouchers from the Providence Housing Authority, and they have been previously approved for both ARP funding and BHRI funding. They also have their Part 1 and 2 approvals for the historic. So this financing, construction and permanent financing, is the last funding that they need to complete their stack. The project is well positioned to move quickly to firm commitment. We are basically just waiting for the receipt of the appraisal, which is taking a long time these days. So we hope to be back to you either in May or June for firm approval. So this resolution is for preliminary approval of a taxable construction and permanent loan in the amount of $3 million. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions? James Thorson, do we have any questions?
This is Kevin Orth. I have a question and some comments. We did not have a credit committee meeting this month, so again, didn't vet all these projects. I have to say, I think they're all great projects. this one, I agree with you, and this is really unique. And without the low-income housing tax credits and the availability of soft funds, I think, to enable this type of transaction to occur. So. I like to see this. We don't always get the opportunity to do this type of thing. Just a question about the rents. I don't know if you have a market study in hand yet, but do you feel that the 80% rents are achievable in that location?
I think the 80% rents are achievable. I think a couple of the units are small, so we are waiting for both the market study and the appraisal, and there may be an adjustment based on the results of that.
Okay.
Market rents, in Providence, they are high and they are still going up. So I think the rents are achievable. It's a question of whether or not they're applicable for the size
for
of the
unit.
A couple of the units are small.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Director, if I could just add, I think this, just to expand upon what Commissioner Watson, I think this is a great example of a public-private or a nonprofit and a for-profit partnership, and this is a for-profit developer, a nonprofit service provider, and we'd love to see more of these relationships and partnerships happen in Rhode Island. And it's also renovating a really dilapidated building on Broad Street, so there's a lot of revitalization involved in this proposal as well.
So how do we get more of those? Marathon is a developer out of Boston. Are they new to us or this market, or how do we foster, looking for this kind of thing, how do we develop that?
I mean, providing this example, I think, is one step in the right direction. And,
all right.
you know, matching up our, you know, our for-profit developers like Penrose with the East Greenwich Housing Authority. We have that example as well as part of the LIHTC deal. So I think more and more of this will allow us to do really the volume of affordable housing production that we need in the state.
Okay. Great. Do we have other comments or questions? It's James Thorson again. What I'd like to do is, we already called the motion.
We need a motion.
We need a motion.
Ms. Chandler, so moved.
Kevin Orth, I second.
We have a motion and a second. We'll ask Corinne, please, to conduct a roll call vote on this motion.
Yes, this is Corinne Myers speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of preliminary approval of financing for Copley Chambers 1 in Providence, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again. And with that, what I'd like to do is ask Carol to provide a brief overview of low-income housing tax credits and the process.
Thank you, Director. I want to acknowledge the work of my colleagues, James Comer and Ann Berman, Dean Harrison, and all of the development officers and ancillary financing folks that looked at the 12 proposals that were submitted for housing tax credits. As you might imagine, it's a tremendous amount of work, which is why it takes a good period of time for us to get before the board. We knew that it was imperative, given the volume of the ancillary dollars that are available, to move these this month. Generally, we would be before you in May. So if they're not already working hard, they work super hard to get here, bring these before you. Proud of the work that we put into engaging with partners and the general public around our QAP and the associated scoring, including our public hearing. We had at least three additional public meetings on the QAP to solicit feedback on the plan. We're recommending a record number of developments, five deals, providing terrific geographic diversity and ultimately producing over 100 units. So I want to thank Commissioner Orth, who assisted us in the evaluation of the proposals. He's always here with us, giving us sound advice. So let me turn it over to Ann Berman. She's going to provide introductory comments and on the process.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. I also just want to say thank you to staff. This was a heavy lift, and they did a great job, and we got it done 30 days ahead of schedule. So I could not be prouder, and we have new staff who have not been through the process before. So just want to say that they did a great job. So just by way of background, Rhode Island Housing gets the small state minimum for 9% credits, which in 2022 is $2.975 million. We had approximately $2.85 million to reserve. So as Carol said, we received 12 applications. Nine of the proposals were strictly new production. Three of them were a mix of both new production and preservation. And I'll note that seven of the proposals included a mixed income component. As Carol mentioned, we did, a pretty robust overview and some updating of the QAP last year. To incentivize our goals, and I would say overall the applicants really responded pretty positively. Most of the projects were thought out and pretty high scoring. You could get as many as 138, the highest project almost 109 points, which I think is really terrific, and we had seven projects above 93, which really made it a competitive round. Four of the proposals were assumed a 9%, 4% quote unquote hybrid transaction to maximize resources, just to make it that much more complicated. Three of which are actually being approved. We score the nine, we don't score the four, but the four have to be consistent with the QAP. And then the last thing I want to note is that how oversubscribed we were. We received $12.4 million worth of tax credit requests for $2.9 million of resources. We received $16 million of home requests. We have $7.3 million to allocate. And most surprisingly, 17 million of housing trust funds, and we have 3 million to allocate. So across many of these applications, you're going to see, quote, it's a gap because there just wasn't enough housing trust fund money to go around. So they're going to have to apply in this upcoming round. And we reviewed the applications with senior staff, collectively 5 awards, 4 million plus of awards, which means that we will be forward allocating some of next year's credits, which is consistent with what we've done over the last 4 or 5 years. So,
Director, if we could ask Commissioner Oss to.
Yes, please. Kevin, can you give us?
Because he participated.
Certainly happy to jump.
Credit comments, please.
I echo what Carol and Ann have to say. It was a very robust round of applications. I think they were very, very high quality proposals and very competitive, as you said. There were many in the mid-90s to over 100 points. So I think they've responded very well to what we have shown out that we want to see in the QAP. And we've got projects in Providence. We've got projects in Lincoln, Middletown, East Greenwich, in some very high-income areas as well. So I think we can all be very, very pleased about the projects that we're looking at here today. And I know there's a lot of funding sources, too, so that contributed to trying to speed this process up so you could coordinate all of that. So I really wanted to thank everyone's efforts to that end.
So if I could ask a question, Kevin or Ann, the summary of the underwriting metrics indicate that pro forma does not currently support amortizing debt, and so staff made a recommendation to eliminate the reserve and the permanent loan to improve operations. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, please?
You must be talking about
you.
Yeah, this was the Summer Street too. I think it's Frenchtown.
Frenchtown Road. Should we move on to the presentation, Tim, Director?
Okay, yes.
Would you like to do that?
That's fine.
Okay.
So I just have some questions on some of the details.
Sure. To move on to board action number 6 then?
Okay.
Are you done, Commissioner Orff?
Yeah, I sure. I think maybe one other thing with the 9%, 4%, 20%. It's done because the 9% is maxed out at the $1.2 million, roughly, I think, of annual credit. So in order to get the deal done, add on the 4% credits as well, which are given by right with the tax exempt bonds, and then it also allows us to throw in some more soft money into the transaction. So it's a more cumbersome process, but it's how deals are getting done. And so we'll just, it's something a little bit new for us here in Rhode Island. It's not new nationally, a little new for us. So I think we'll just have to look at that over the next year to make sure that we're scoring that and looking at those properly. But we're happy to see that in order to get these transactions done, the developers stepped up to do it.
Yep.
Okay. So thank you.
Sure.
That's helpful. So let's move, Jim Thorson, let's move right into board action number 6, which is the approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Frenchtown Road. Two votes are going to take place on this item, and because of the two tranches, and Ann will take us through the presentation. Number 6, Ann.
Thank you, Andy. This is Ann Berman. I'll do my best to be brief. As brief as I can on these, they're complicated transactions. So as the commissioner said, this is for approval known for a project that's known as Frenchtown 1 and 2. The developer is a partnership between Penrose LLC, which is a for-profit based in Pennsylvania, and Cove Homes, Inc., which is a nonprofit spinoff of the East Greenwich Housing Authority. This developer is proposing a hybrid, as we mentioned, 4 and 9. For the 9%, the request is for a reservation of $545,682 of tax credits, a home loan of a preliminary approval loan of $1,336,000, and a housing trust fund loan of $1,781,000. For the 4% tranche, which we refer to as Frenchtown 2, I'm sure they'll come up with a better name than that, the request is for preliminary approval of tax exempt construction financing of $5,600,000. Together, the two tranches will produce 63 units on a vacant parcel in East Greenwich. And I will note that the site is owned by Cove Homes. They bought it. They borrowed money from our land bank to purchase about 3 or 4 years ago, and this was excess land that had been owned by Rhode Island DOT. There are 30%, 60%, and 100% AMI units in this transaction, and the 30% units will be supported with either project-based vouchers or HUD Section 811 vouchers. I will note that this was the highest scoring project in the funding round. There'll be one building. The project does include some amenities, including some meeting space. This is a 55-plus community, so they want to be able to bring in some wellness care and other types of amenities. They are utilizing solar panels, net zero metering to provide common energy, and they will be providing free broadband to the LIHTC residents. Those are some of the things we tried to install in the QAP. It's not an inexpensive project. The TDC is about $390,000 a unit. There's a tremendous amount of site work that needs to be done at this site. And as I mentioned, they did not receive home and HTF on the 4% tranche, so you'll see that they are seeking some gap financing there. So between the two tranches, we're asking for approval of two resolutions. The first is for approval of a reservation of 9% tax credits for home and HTF, and the second is for preliminary approval of a $5.6 million tax-exempt loan for Frenchtown 2.
Thank you, Anne. It's with that presentation, can we have a motion on Frenchtown Road 1?
Liz Tanner, so moved.
Liz, second.
Kevin Orth, second.
Kevin Orth, second. Do we have any questions or is there any further discussion?
I just had a question in the deviation from standard underwriting. It talked about a concern there. I just wanted to see.
The second portion of the bridge loan test. This is, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, I think every 4% project that we've done in the last couple of years that has to have a bridge loan in order to meet the IRS's requirement for 50%, what they call the 50% test, fails the second bridge loan test, sort of compensate for that. We do require a certain amount of equity, a minimum of 15% of equity from the syndicator at closing. We have construction completion guarantees. We take a very robust look at the construction before it's done so that we're as comfortable as we can be. We, knock on wood, haven't had any issues yet, but I think most of the time they fail that test.
I think that's true, but the risk is that the amount bridging is greater than the tax credit equity amount. So how is it going to be repaid? And here I think the assumption has been, but it's not stated as such, but I think the assumption is that there's so much state soft money going in that we're really bridging our own resources.
Right, which is that very common. Yeah, thank you.
This is Leanne. I have a question and then just I'll do my comment first. I think that there was a little bit of a copy and paste error, so on both the executive summary and the underwriting metrics, the second one is listed as Summer Street in both spaces.
You're right.
I believe that's not.
Thank you. You are correct. We tried really hard to catch it up. I'm so sorry.
Just to be fair, we made the decision on a Wednesday to bring this to the April board meeting. The deadline was Friday to get to legal, so there was a lot of rushing done.
I'm trying to do it with criticism.
We appreciate
it.
Pointing it out.
Thank you.
When we vote on it, we know which project we're talking about, and yep. I have to recuse from the Summer Street one, so I especially want to be clear that this is not the Summer Street project. The other thing I wanted to ask about was the 100% AMI units. So am I right to understand that this is all rental?
It is all rental, correct.
And then can you speak to the fact that 100% AMI does not fit our definition of affordable for rental properties?
So those I believe it's 19 units, however many units
correct.
It is, that are 100% are not eligible for tax credit. It's a way to, there's several reasons.
Basically offset the rent for the lower.
Some of it is to offset rent. Some of it is to create sort of a mixed income community. And I think originally they were intended to be market rate, but the developer worked with the town and by making them at 100%, the projects, the town is going to allow them to be taxed at 8% of the gross revenue, which really helps the numbers work and gives them a surety into the future in terms of what their tax liability will be. And this is a 55-plus community. The expectation is that some of these folks, I mean, all of these folks could be working. And so folks, there's a huge need for sort of that above 60, below 120, 100% AMI, and I don't really think there's a lot of affordable rentals in East Greenwich. So, you know, it's really 30% to 100%. It really creates a lot of opportunity for people.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Any further questions?
I had two. One is, I believe, Jim, that you had raised earlier, and that is on the 4% transaction. Staff's comment that it does not support, at least the pro forma does not support debt service. So could you speak to that a little bit
sure,
more? I know
sure.
Asset management had some things to say as well. Maybe
yeah,
bring that
yeah
up.
Our asset management team is a big part of our review. And again, this is preliminary approval, so the numbers still do kind of move around. The first mortgage was not significant to begin with, and in order to support it, they were basically seeking soft money to provide a debt service reserve that would get them to the debt service coverage requirements that are in our guidelines. And at the end of the day, if you took the mortgage out and you took the deficit reserve out, it was, you know, like a $150,000 swing, and it just didn't make any sense to have that mortgage. Now, this could change. The numbers could change a little bit. We made up the difference by basically increasing the deferred fee a little bit. So I think these are we're going to undergo plenty of changes between now and the time we close. I note that we're in a very fluctuating interest rate environment, so I think a lot of the numbers are likely to shift a little bit before you get to firm. And in all fairness to the developer, we haven't, you know, spent a lot of time. They don't know, you know, they didn't really have an opportunity to respond to our changes the way we've approved it. Likely to have some more conversations with the developer.
Okay. Comment. I think this is a fantastic proposal. It was the highest scoring I think we had here. It is requesting a relatively high amount of state subsidy per unit set aside at the 60% AMI or less. Just to note that mixed income projects, you know, they cost a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I just want us to be conscious of that, and maybe it's something to think about as we look at our QAP in the future. I think the goal of mixed income is great, but we got to know how much we're spending to achieve it. Another point is, I can't help but say this, Carol, we do have workforce housing dollars in this project. The fact that it's age-restricted housing, it does not go against our workforce housing program. So I think, you know, it does meet the requirements, but there again, we might want to consider down the road not having not being able to use maybe workforce housing in an age-restricted project. And this is not discrimination against those older than 55.
We had an exciting debate at the funding committee, Director. Yes, we had an exciting debate about it.
Those are all my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Jim Thorson again. Do we have any other questions? If not, I'd like to ask Corinne to call the roll, please.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Frenchtown Road in East Greenwich with respect to Frenchtown Road 1. Please say aye or opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again. And with that, I'd like to move forward to request a motion to approve board action number 6 with respect to Frenchtown Road 2 to the Board of Commissioners. And please state your name.
Ms. Tanner, so moved.
Kevin Orth, second.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? I think we flogged this. So, with that, what I'd like to do is ask Corinne to please conduct the roll call.
Certainly. This is Corinne. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of providing approval for the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Frenchtown Road in East Greenwich with respect to Frenchtown Road 2, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. And this is Jim Thorson. We're going to move on to board action number 7, which is approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing parcel 9 in Providence. Again, there's going to be 2 votes on this due to the 2 tranche structure of the deal. And Ann is up again to present board action number 7.
Thank you. You're going to be sick of me by the end of this meeting.
No.
This request is for the project known as Parcel 9. The developer is Penrose. And again, this is a hybrid transaction. This site is a vacant parcel in the Fox Point neighborhood of Providence. It's currently owned by the I-195 Commission. And Penrose was selected as the developer by the Commission for this site. This was the second highest scoring project in the round. For the 9%, we're seeking a reservation of $515,987,000 in tax credits, preliminary approval of a home loan of $1.217 million, and a housing trust fund loan of $1,230,880. And for the 4% project, we're seeking preliminary approval of a tax-exempt construction loan of $6 million. When completed, we'll have 66 units of mixed-income housing, as well as a Head Start daycare, which will be owned and operated by Children's Friend. And the building will be divided into 3 condominiums to further complicate the transaction. Between 1 and 2, we'll have 30%, 60%. We'll have some workforce units, which are between 80 and 120, and we will have market-rate units, which are above 120. We'll have 811 vouchers as well as some project-based vouchers. The total development cost is about $365,000 a unit. Parcel 9, will utilize solar panels on the roof to generate electricity, and they will also be entering into a community net metering agreement, which will allow them to meet net zero standards. And they're also planning to provide free broadband to residents in the LIHTC unit. I will note again that they did not receive home or HTF on the 4% transaction, and so they'll be seeking grant funds there. So this again is 2 tranches with 2 approvals. The first is for approval of a reservation of 9% tax credits and preliminary approval of home and HTF financing for parcel 9-1. And the second is for preliminary approval of a $6 million tax-exempt construction loan for Parcel 9-2. Happy to answer any questions.
And I have questions again. And the first one is, this is a new contractor to Rhode Island Haynes Construction Company out of Seymour, Connecticut. What kind of due diligence do you do on Haynes Construction?
We've done some. The way the proposal was submitted, Haynes provided kind of their initial construction financing. I think that they've left it open that they may consider going through a competitive bid process once it moves along. Again, you know, we will be doing more due diligence should they be the selected contractor.
And Director, if I may, like encouraging developers to come into Rhode Island. We also encourage qualified new contractors to also come in. You know, we have a terrific group of contractors that tend to work on our developments. They have experience doing high-tech deals, but we always welcome more competition to come into Rhode Island.
And I will note, I'm just one more thing, that this project also received points. While they have an out-of-state contractor, they have committed to making sure that at least, don't quote me on this, it's either 50 or 75% of the subcontractors are actually Rhode Island-based
okay.
subcontractors.
The other question I had is that, like Frenchtown, so I imagine the answer is going to be very similar, deviating somewhat from the standard underwriting procedure here with respect to the debt service coverage ratio. And in this instance, the developer is utilizing a deficit reserve to supplement the shortfall because it's more cost effective. And
this was on the 4% one. And in this case, the delta between the amount of loan that they were able to generate and the reserve was close to $1 million. So we were comfortable. Again, we're not currently projected to be the senior lender on this transaction. They're working with a different lender. Again, we'll do our best to get the loans, but it's really ultimately going to be up to the senior lender's underwriting requirements.
Okay.
I have a few questions, Jim. Thank you. This is another super high-scoring project. I think it's the second time around, this one as well.
Yes.
I think last year it didn't score nearly as highly. I think they figured out what we were looking for and adjusted the project accordingly. I think they also reduced the total development cost a few ways, value engineered the cost down. And then they just scored across the board really highly in all categories, so that was really good to see. This one also has a very high amount of state subsidy per affordable unit in it. It's great to see in that location and with the mixed income, but again, just want to make sure we're, I think, being as efficient as we can with our 9% dollars to go after that, maybe deeper affordability. And then I guess the only other one was really this, the meeting of the debt service coverage, and maybe, Kara, if you could speak to this. I know we're in a environment with interest rates that have just been kind of skyrocketing over the last 90 days. How do we feel about this project and others that might be a little close to performing?
Mm-hmm. So we are right now looking at all the projects in our pipeline. We're looking at the current interest rates because certainly if we had quoted rates even, you know, 3 weeks, a month ago, there are significant differences. So we're going back, we're looking at those rates. We're also looking at other ways of financing, including some variable rate debt, which we haven't really done too much of. We would hedge that debt to reduce our risk, but it would help us to bring the interest rates down. And so the project could still leverage, you know, a decent mortgage size. We have a bond that we are planning in the next few months, and I believe that's going to be the first one that we do the hedged variable rate debt on. And so we'll bring that to the board and discuss the risks and the impact that it'll have on the project.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Anybody else have questions? Hearing none, what I'd like to do is request a motion to approve Board Action 7 with respect to Parcel 9.
Liz Tanner, so moved.
We have second.
Second, Kevin Orr.
Kevin Orr, second. And it's Jim Thorson, please. Corinne, can you call the roll for us on the
yes.
motion?
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Parcel 9 in Providence with respect to Parcel 9-1, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson. And so I'd like to follow on with a request for a motion to to approve board action number 7 with respect to parcel 9-2 to the Board of Commissioners.
Liz Tanner, so moved.
Thank you, Liz.
Second, Kevin Orth.
Thank you, Kevin. Do we have any comments or questions on parcel 9-2? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Corinne to please call the roll.
This is Corinne. Commissioners, if you're in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary possible financing for parcel 9 with respect to parcel 9-2, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous and the motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. And with that, what I'd like to do is move on to board action number 8. And we're going to ask Ann Berman to introduce the approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for the villages at Manville. No deal. Ann, please lead us.
Thank you. This is for the villages at Manville. The developer is Dakota Partners, and I'm happy to say this is a more traditional. There's only one resolution. For a reservation of $1,190,000 of tax credits, which I note is the 40% of our annual allocation limit, as well a permanent taxable loan of $2.8 million and a home loan of $1.9 million. This is a vacant site in Lincoln. It's adjacent to St. James Church, for those of you who are familiar with the area. They are proposing to add 3 new buildings and a community building. And I note it was the third highest project in the round. There'll be a total of 72 units. 57 will be affordable. 15 of them will be market rate. The affordable units will range from 30 to 60%, and they will be using 811 vouchers. Dakota is a good, they find it a very useful resource. I do note that market rents are pretty conservative, and below the market, below the actual market rents in the neighborhood. So they do have some flexibility there, should they need it. They have signed an MOU with the Blackstone Valley CAP agency, as well as the Pawtucket YMCA, to provide services, employment service, resume building, exercise classes. And they're also providing hardwired broadband for the residents, and it's going to meet tier 2 energy standards. So not quite net zero, but very energy efficient. It's very cost effective. It's about $247,000 a unit. We've talked about this before. Dakota is a vertically integrated company, and they own they have an identity of interest construction company. They did request housing trust funds, and again, those funds were not awarded. So they will be seeking grant funds, gap funds for those. This request for approval is for a reservation of $1,190,000 of low-income housing tax credits, preliminary approval of a first mortgage of $2.8 million, and a home loan in the amount of $1.9 million.
Thank you, Ann. Do we have questions, comments, concerns?
This is Kevin Orth. I'd like to make a few comments, if I could.
I'd
like to echo, Ann, what you had to say, that this is a project that very efficiently utilizes the financial resources that it has. I think it's under $250,000 a unit. Some of the other projects are, over $365,000 a unit. And its amount of request in both credits and other soft dollars per affordable unit is relatively low compared to many of the other projects we're looking at. So I'd just like to commend them. It's tough, especially in this environment, to build for that cost. So kudos to them, and I'm supportive of the project.
Thank you, Kevin. I've driven by this property many times and have often thought what a great spot this would be for development. And so I just think that this is great, great news, because I would less than 3 miles away from there.
Good. We'll get you to do the construction monitoring for
us. Stop to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that, what I'd like to do is entertain a motion. Oh, sorry.
I have a comment.
Yes, please.
This is Leanne. I know that I kind of bully Dakota Partners, and I apologize for that, but I do just want to say that while I very much appreciate in the preliminary financing that they have estimated the low total development cost, and it is certainly admirable that they're very efficiently using the resource, I hope that we will not see a significant increase or for them to come back after the project is completed mm-hmm. with a higher total development cost.
Yep.
That has been an issue with this developer before, and so I just wanted to be on the record that it's still something that the treasurer has asked me to monitor with this particular developer, and I hope that they, in this project, use these dollars as efficiently as they have proposed.
As do we, and we anticipated the, you know, and agree with you, so we did go back and spend more time looking and evaluating the cost here. The only thing I would say is all of these folks are already struggling, and it's not just them, are struggling with cost increases across the industry. And I'm not going to be surprised if some of the applications that come in next week are already looking for gap funds for projects that are approved today. But we hear you loud and clear, and we have delivered that message to them loud and clear.
With that, if there's no other questions, we have a motion.
Liz Tanner, so moved.
Second.
Second, Kevin Orr.
Thank you. It's Jim Thorson. Any comments or questions subsequently? In that case, what I'd like to do is ask General Counsel to conduct a roll call vote on the motion.
This is Corinne Myers. If you're in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for the villages at Manville and Lincoln, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Burns.
Aye.
Commissioner Orth.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous and the motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again. We're going to proceed to introduce board action number 9, approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Summer Street in Providence. Moving back to the two-vote format that will take place because of the tranche of the deal. Anne, we've got you again.
I'm sorry to interrupt again. Anne, this is Leanne. I need to recuse myself from this vote.
Okay.
Thanks very much. This is Anne Berman. This is for approval of Summer Street 1 and 2, the developer's Crossroads, Rhode Island. The 9% tranche, Summer Street 1, is a request for $1,120,000 of tax credits and preliminary approval of a home loan of $500,000. The 4% piece is seeking preliminary approval of a tax-exempt construction loan of $14 million. Of which $3,025,000 will remain as permanent debt. Together, this project will provide 176 units, all targeted to 30% residents whose household income is at or less than 30% of area median income. It's on a vacant parcel on Summer Street, which is basically directly behind the existing Crossroads Tower at 160 Broad Street. These units will serve as replacement units for the existing units in the tower, most of which are single room occupancy units, and as we've talked about before, not great living conditions. So this is going to be a dramatic improvement. Later on, the phases 3 and 4 will renovate the tower into more desirable housing. I note that this project will utilize the HUD RAD2 program, which will convert an existing McKinney-Vento contract, which has historically low rents, into a 20-year project-based rental contract that has more market-oriented rents. And that's going to really provide some of the power behind this renovation and redevelopment. As I mentioned, all of the units will be below 30%. We'll have 90 units supported with the PBRA contract. 44 units will use HUD 811 vouchers. We'll have 22 units that'll be served by the Continuum of Care program, and 20 units that are self-pay. The building is designed to be net zero. We'll have solar panels and high energy, high efficiency construction. Also will provide broadband. I do note that the RAD 2 contract triggers Davis-Bacon, which does increase some of the cost. However, even with Davis-Bacon, the combined total development cost is about 316,000 a unit. Units are small. It's a very efficient building. It's a big building, but it's pretty efficient. Again, no HOME or HTF were awarded for the 4%. Given the population, this is one of the most complicated capital stacks I've ever seen. I think I lost count trying to count how many sources they had. So for us, this is an approval of 2020 low-income housing tax credits in the amount of $1,120,000 and home program funds of $500,000 for Summer Street 1 and for Summer Street 2, preliminary approval of a $14 million tax-exempt loan, of which $3,025,000 will remain as permanent debt.
Director, if I could just add, one of the properties that is included in this, I believe we acquired under the older site acquisition program with CARES Act funding. Is that one of the properties of this site?
No.
No?
No, it's adjacent to the site and part of Crossroads' larger design for the area.
Okay, got it. I wanted to note that we received correspondence from the South Providence Neighborhood Association with respect to the Summer Street development. We uploaded that letter for the board's information.
Any further comment on the letter?
I have a question about, and you're saying it's a brand new construction, but is it they're going to take down existing buildings and sort of replace?
Nope, the existing tower building, which is at the corner of Broad and that sort of road, is going to remain. Upon completion, and I can't remember the total unit cap, right now there's 90-something, altogether, 176 SROs.
In the tower.
Those will be basically redeveloped, and so they'll be basically 80 to 85 one-bedroom or efficiency units. So we've done this in another building, the one in Newport, where they basically take three units and create three SROs and create two units that have, a bedroom, a bath, and a small kitchen so that folks have their own space and they're not, bathing in a public restroom. They don't, they have their own kitchen. So at the end of the day, there'll be an addition of about 80-ish units for this population, because they're doing one for one now, plus the renovation later. So
it increases the number of units from 80 to 176?
Overall, so right now there's 176 SROs in that tower. Upon completion, there'll be 176 one bedrooms plus these 84 units. So what will happen is a good chunk of the population will transition over. This is a five-year plan. So.
This is Kevin Orr. Did staff or Corinne, do you have some words to add to whether our actions would be in violation of the affirmatively furthering fair housing requirements of HUD?
Thank you for the question. I think if you would like to have a discussion about the potential for any litigation or to receive legal advice on this, that we can do that in a separate, properly noticed executive session. But if you would like, we can talk more generally about the law that's invoked in the letter. I think that's appropriate for this occasion. The letter, and I'm going to pull it up right now, states the opinion that the development would reinforce a concentration of poverty where one already exists in a Providence neighborhood. The Providence Neighborhood Association, the draft of the letter is referring to is the requirement in the Fair Housing Act that HUD and recipients of federal funding through HUD affirmatively further the policies of the Fair Housing Act, which is commonly referred to as affirmatively furthering fair housing. that means taking meaningful actions, not just to fight discrimination, but to kind of proactively overcome patterns of segregation and promote inclusive communities. Trying to implement affirmatively furthering fair housing through an interim final rule at the moment, which sets up a voluntary fair housing planning process and provides HUD support, like technical assistance, for carrying out those planning processes, and obligates program participants to certify that they'll affirmatively further fair housing in their consolidated plans, in their annual action plans, and in their PHA plans. The program participants that are covered under the AFFH structure are jurisdictions that submit consolidated plans for CDBG, ESG, HOME, and HOPWA, and also public housing agencies that receive Section 8 assistance. I can defer to Ann and James on the details, but Rhode Island Housing's QAP, which was adopted by the board last year following a public process, does recognize the importance of a balanced approach in making funding decisions. And the QAP recognizes and prioritizes many factors. Without recalling the exact language of the QAP off the top of my head, those factors involve lack of public investment, lack of private investment, the need to which structure, the needs represented by deteriorating structures, and the importance of preserving housing, community revitalization needs, as well as important policies like geographic diversity. Again, if you think that you'd like to have a discussion about and receive legal advice about this topic, that's probably best done in a separate executive session when we have the opportunity to properly notice one.
Okay. I just wanted to get your general take on it. We are funding Copley or Chambers as well, which is right in that neighborhood, and that goes up to 100% area median income, I believe, right?
80%.
Or 80%. We're looking at funding project in Lincoln and Middletown, East Greenwich, in addition to Providence. So as a whole, and not just for this particular project, as a whole, we're looking to disperse funds throughout the state, looking to deconcentrate poverty, increase opportunity, for residents across income spectrums. So I feel very good about our overall effort. I don't want to minimize what the resident organization is saying about concentrating poverty in that particular area, though. So I would ask that we continue to be open with that organization and, you know, see if there's some other measures that could be undertaken to, you know, remediate their concerns. I guess I'd also like to add that this could be a catalyst for more investment in the area because this looks to be a very high-quality development that they are proposing. Yep. And it would certainly improve the lives of the residents that are in that space currently because, as you say, they would have their own shower, cooking facilities. They would have all the supportive services that that population really needs in order to, you know, survive and do well. Mm-hmm. So I'd be curious to hear any other thoughts you have on that. But that was my own. Oh, and one other comment is just that it is a very complicated structure. I agree. But I think at the end of the day, particularly with getting this RAD conversion, you should have the rents so that you can take care of really high operating expenses for this particular population. And designed, I think the space is designed in a way to kind of withstand the type of use that this population is going to give it. So I hear you that it's complicated, but I'm assuming we got a nice, smart team in place.
We got the A team.
Right. But at the end of the day, it's a structure that should provide for a long-term financial sustainability. Is that, would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And just further, I spoke with the Crossroads leadership team in response to the letter, and they offered that if the board would like any clarification from their perspective, they'd be happy to provide. They just saw the letter yesterday,
yeah.
Same as the rest of us, so they just wanted to make that note.
Is there any existing relationship between Crossroads and the association?
I can't speak to that. I just don't know, Commissioner. I know that, you know, certainly they exist in the same space, but I don't know that they've had a relationship particularly.
And have we worked at all with the association on this, or we just received the letter? Because I know it just came yesterday.
Yeah, we just received the letter yesterday. That was the first I've heard about it. I don't think anyone else has heard more.
No, this is the first we've seen of the letter.
And is the city of, what's the city of Providence's position on the project? Have they taken one? Or?
I don't know that this is going before the city. I don't know the status of their permitting with the city of Providence. And given that we've only received the letter, we can certainly provide additional information to the board as it goes through the permitting process and everything else that's going to be involved in this, you know, complex transaction. So we can certainly do that. We can have the executive session if the board would like that before committing any resources to the development. We're happy to do whatever the board would like.
I've worked with the letter writer in the past, and I have a healthy dose of respect for him, so I have no doubt that this is a real concern, and he represents a wide variety of other members, so I would like to try to do what we can to work with them or to make the right connections, because you know, I feel very strongly about him going out of his way with his entire association to write that letter to us.
I have a question. This is a preliminary approval. How much time is there between this and the final?
Probably quite a bit of time as they assemble all of the pieces, right? And I don't imagine this closing within 6 months.
No, I would say this is likely late fourth quarter of this year, best case scenario. I mean,
so,
the developer would like it in 6 months, but it's complicated.
I understand. I don't want to slow this down on the one hand. On the other hand, there seems to be enough of a time for us to sort through this between now and when they come back for final, assuming that there's any adjustments that need to be made. So I think we should move it forward, personally, and then take this to the city and take it to them and get their input and see if there's ways that we can mitigate any of their concerns. For the reasons that you said, and James, did you have something
to say? Yeah, just to follow up on a question, I got a little bit more information as we're sitting here. It has received city approval and city home funds as well. So the city is on board.
All right, well, again, Liz has a connection there, and I think we need to respect it. When somebody complains, we need to listen to what they have to
Absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right.
So with that, unless there's any further comments, what I'd like to do is call the motion.
I just want to add real quick, I think, I know Josh and I, Deputy Secretary Saul and I have been working with Crossroads and some of these neighborhood concerns, and I think it's something that we should talk about on the side with Josh. He can be a good partner with us in this. But Liz Tanner, so moved.
Do I have a second?
Second, Kevin Orr.
Kevin. Corinne, will you please call the roll for the vote on the motion?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking.
Commissioners, when I call your names, if you are in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Summer Street in Providence with respect to Summer Street 1, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
I note that Commissioner Designee Byrne has recused.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
With three affirmative votes and one recusal, the motion carries.
Thank you. Corinne, it's Jim Thorson again. And I hope the minutes will reflect some of the concerns that we expressed in our discussion, and that staff will be able to follow up and give us any updates as appropriate. One we just got hot off the press. Thank you, James. With that, what I'd like to do is to request a motion to approve board action number 9 with respect to Summer Street 2 to the Board of Commissioners, and I'll need a motion for that.
Ms. Tanner, so moved.
Kevin Orth, second.
All right, I have a motion and a second, and with that, do we have any questions, comments, concerns? Have not been expressed already. Corinne, would you please call the roll?
Yes, this is Corinne Meyer speaking. When I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for Summer Street in Providence with respect to Summer Street 2, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay.
Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
I note that Commissioner Designee Byrne has recused. Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
With 3 affirmative votes and 1 recusal, the motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again, and with that, I'd like to welcome you again back to the table. And request a motion to approve. We need Ann to, I guess we have board action number 10.
We're getting there, Director.
The last time you're going to hear from me.
Tell them. Approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for West House 2 in Middletown.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. This is for a project known as West House 2. However, it's not a bifurcated deal. It really is the second West House building that's going up. The developer is Church Community Housing Corporation. They are a nonprofit that is very active throughout Newport County. And we are seeking a reservation of low-income housing tax credits of $1,190,000, preliminary approval of a taxable construction of permanent loan of $11,250,000, of which $2.225 million will remain as permanent debt, and a home loan of $994,784. So West House 2 will be a three-story addition to an existing building that's known as West House, now West House 1, which is a 50-unit HUD 202 development that was built in 1996. It actually repurposed a large commercial office building that Bank of America and whatever their predecessor was before that basically held as an REO. So this proposed development will leverage off of their West House 1's common space, as well as their parking, which provides for a pretty cost-effective property at $288,000 a unit. So HUD, just as by way of background, the HUD 202 of West House 1 has a project-based HAP contract for all of the units, and it is limited to residents 62 or over. West House 2 will be a 55-plus community. There will be no HAP contract, and the rents will be targeted to households with incomes up to 60% of AMI. They will have 6 811 vouchers. And again, this is a project that did apply for Housing Trust Fund dollars, did not receive them, so they'll be applying for the gap financing. So this request is for a reservation of $1,190,000 of low-income housing tax credits, a construction to permanent loan $11,250,000, of which $2,225,000 will remain as permanent, and a home loan of $994,784. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions? Kevin, could you give us a run down on the credit?
Sure, happy to, Jim. I think this is a very solid, straightforward proposal. And there was some conversation in the 9% tax credit review committee meeting, only because we would have to forward allocate credits in order to provide the credits necessary for this transaction. But I think that's very prudent, as Ann said. It's a very common practice. In a way, if we don't do it, we could risk losing credits if some of these 2022 deals don't go through. So I think it's a smart thing to do, and they've proven out they have West House 1, so they know what the rents expenses should be. It's using existing infrastructure there. It seems like a very smart development, and happy to approve funding for it.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. It's Jim Thorson, and what I'd like to do, we'll give you a second bite at the apple, folks, for asking questions. After we get a motion, can we get a motion?
Liz Tanner, so moved.
Thank you.
Kevin Orr, second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any questions or further discussion? Hearing none, I'd like to ask the general counsel, Corinne, please call the roll.
This is Corinne speaking. If you are in favor of approving the reservation of low-income housing tax credits and preliminary approval of financing for West House 2 in Middletown, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
Commissioner Orth?
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion carries.
With the board's indulgence, we are going to try to expedite as quickly as possible. We're coming up on time here, and I want to be respectful of everybody's calendar. We have board action number 11. Oh, by the way, it's Jim Thorson. Approval of engagement of consultant for 2022 Continuum of Care Competition. And with that, I'd like to introduce Jessica Mowry, Assistant Director of Leased Housing and Rental Services, who will present board action number 11. Jessica.
Thank you. Good morning. I'll be quick. This is Jessica Mowry. As you likely recall, Rhode Island Housing serves as the collaborative applicant on behalf of the Rhode Island Continuum of Care with respect to funding made available through the Continuum of Care program, which is the Homeless Assistance Initiative of HUD. In support of this role, Rhode Island Housing seeks your permission to engage a professional consulting firm to develop the application for competitive funding on behalf of the Continuum of Care. A request for proposals was issued in February 2022, seeking proposals from qualified consultants. Two proposals were received. A review committee consisting of Rhode Island Housing staff reviewed the proposals in accordance with the RFP criteria and determined that Housing Innovations was best qualified to carry out the Rhode Island Continuum of Care application activities. The committee reached this conclusion due in part to staff's past experience with Housing Innovations and additionally the specificity of their response to the proposed scope of work. Housing Innovations is a New York-based consulting and training firm focused on implementing solutions to prevent and end homelessness. The proposed engagement is expected to last for 12 months, during which time Housing Innovations will prepare the response to the competitive funding opportunity issued by HUD, and this agreement will not exceed $20,000. At this time, Rhode Island Housing staff request your approval of this action.
Thank you, Jessica. What I'd like to do is to request a motion to approve board action number 11 to the Board of Commissioners.
Ms. Tanner, so moved.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any comments, questions, or concerns?
I have a question about the scope of work.
Liz?
But just the scope of work, just literally just preparing an application?
It's a little bit more than that. So the application is very complicated and has multiple steps. So Housing Innovations traditionally provides some training and familiarization to the subrecipients based on HUD's regulations for that program year, that competition, and then performs some training and technical assistance in preparing the application. But it's not simply writing a narrative and gathering data. It's quite a complicated process.
And we don't feel we have the staff able to do that or with the skill level to do that?
I would say we don't have the staff able that have the capacity to do that. So this just allows us to expand our capacity in that regard.
This is Leanne. I just have a clarifying question. So is the expectation that the $20,000 engagement will be paid if an award is granted by HUD out of that award as part of the administrative costs, or can you speak a little bit to how it's allocated?
Yes. So in our role as the collaborative applicant, we also receive approximately $270,000. The amount changes every year, and that supports the planning activities. And so each year the NOFA response, which includes this hopefully this consulting agreement, comes out of that planning grant.
Thank you. And you said 20,000, but the motion says it's 25,000.
Oh, okay. My apologies, I did not see that discrepancy. 25,000.
Well, that definitely ruins it for everything. Uh, not supposed to make jokes on this. That's Jim Thorson. Corinne, would you please call the roll?
Certainly. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of approving the engagement of a consultant for the 2022 continuous care competition as presented, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson.
Aye.
Commissioner Deputy Byrne.
Aye.
Commissioner Orth.
Aye.
And Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again, and lean for the tape, folks. Here the finish line. We've got board action number 12, approval of the FY 2022 Michael S. Van Leesten Memorial Awards Program funding. And for that, we have Christine Hunsinger to present to us.
Thank you. This request is for approval to fund the FY 2022 Michael Van Leesten Memorial Awards Program. This program supports students from diverse backgrounds to pursue academic fields or careers related to the housing industry. This program honors the life and work of Michael Van Leesten, who is dedicated to improving the lives of Rhode Islanders through his business leadership, civil rights activism, and public service. In addition to his many accomplishments, he previously served as the chair of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. The awards program consists of a $5,000 scholarship for a student pursuing a building trade and $5,000 scholarship for a student pursuing an academic degree related to the housing field. In the last two rounds of this program, Rhode Island Housing released applications and internal staff reviewed and made the award. This year, in order to attract a greater number of diverse applicants, we are requesting approval to provide this funding to the Rhode Island College Foundation and New England Institute of Technology to administer Michael S. Van Leesten scholarships on our behalf. I'm happy to answer any questions.
It's Jim Thorson. Do we have any questions? Can we have a motion?
Ms. Tanner? This is Leanne. I second.
We have a motion and a second. Can we have General Counsel, please, call the roll?
Certainly. This is Corinne. If you are in favor of approving the engagement, excuse me. If you are in favor of approving the fiscal year 2022 Michael S. Van Leesten Memorial Awards Program funding as presented, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Vice Chairman Thorson.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne.
Aye.
Commissioner Orr.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous and the motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson. There is no further business. And I request a motion to adjourn.
Leanne,
I need
a motion to adjourn.
Do I have
that's
a second?
That's the one you get.
That's
my favorite one.
Liz Tanner, second.
Oh. Fred, would you call the roll, please?
May we do a voice vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. The motion
thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So,